Hello, and welcome to the Transcending CRM podcast, a show where we explore how the Salesforce ecosystem has impacted the careers of fellow trailblazers and the businesses that have leveraged dynamic growth from the platform. This podcast is brought to you by Silverline. Silverline is a Salesforce digital transformation consultancy headquartered in New York City, specializing in financial services, media and entertainment, and the healthcare industries. I'm your host, JP Owens, Managing Director of Banking and Lending at Silverline. Unfortunately, Elliot's busy today, so we are recording an episode solo. But today we are joined by Ilaria Rollins. Ilaria has been in banking for over 20 years and is the proposed CEO of Fortuna Bank. Previously, Ilaria has held leadership roles at First Bexley Bank and eventually Cincinnati-based First Financial Bank. Ilaria, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So others have listened to hopefully many of our episodes because we've been doing this for a while. But for our listeners, I think we've talked a lot about Elliot and I, at least our history working at a bank together. And I think one thing that's really exciting about this episode is you were one of the first business line leaders we partnered with to really pilot what Salesforce could do for a line of business in a market where there wasn't a ton of brand recognition, there wasn't a huge footprint, and we thought creatively around using a tool to build a process to really drive growth for a team and multiple lines of business. So excited to jump into our history and what you're up to right now.
Thanks.
So Ilaria, can you jump in and tell us a little bit about yourself and your role as the proposed CEO for Fortuna Bank?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, I'm a career banker with a unique blend in my background, having had the opportunity to work in both a de novo institution, owning really the deposit side of the balance sheet, as well as a regional bank leading the retail bank for a $15 billion bank. Both of those perspectives really allowed me to step into my current opportunity to lead a de novo bank in Central Ohio. We're going to be a community bank with a mission to address women's financial issues, including money management, wealth generation, starting or managing a business, mentoring, networking, et cetera.
That's awesome. Can you talk a little bit more about the process, what it's like to start a new bank and what you've been going through and what's been the biggest kind of learning experience as you've gone through this?
Yeah, thanks. The process to start a bank is long. In fact, it's probably a lot longer than I expected. The organizing team for this particular de novo has been talking about it for almost 2 years and probably actively working on it for 18 months. Really early on and kind of in those early days, it was important to get our bank consultants and legal counsel aligned who have experience in the space that could help us meet particular milestone markers and understand what the process looked like. We also spent time in that early kind of early 18 months identifying who our organizing team would be and who was willing to put up at-risk money early on to pay for any expenses incurred prior to the bank opening. Most recently, we submitted the application for the charter back in February and are working through the official application process. Now we expect to be open, hopefully, if all goes well, in about 6 months.
That's awesome. So the bank will offer a full complement of banking services, but you have a very unique mission. Can you talk a little bit more about the mission and how you're hoping to get the right people involved in the community as you get started?
Yeah. First and foremost, as you mentioned, we want to be a bank for everybody. So we'll have accessibility to products and services that will meet the needs of the greater community. But we also really want to be intentional in supporting and lifting women through financial education, mentorships, networking, access to capital. We know that women's businesses are growing at 2 times the national average, yet women only receive about 16% of conventional loan funding. We also know that in a traditional kind of male-female marriage, women tend to manage the day-to-day finances, but leave the long-term retirement planning up to their spouse. And this becomes a challenge when I talk about the next statistic, which is today, women control 44% of the global wealth, but by 2029, they're set to control 77% of the global wealth. So we need to make sure that they have the tools and the knowledge and the confidence to effectively manage their wealth. And that's where we feel like Fortuna has an opportunity to not only have a really strong business case as to why we would want to start a bank that has a mission to support women and their financial freedom, but also there's just a lot of opportunity out there. And so to be specialized in that space, we think is really a great niche.
That's awesome. And I know we've all been hearing a lot in the news the last couple of days. So for anybody listening, it's roughly St. Patrick's Day. It's mid-March. And as we all are aware, we've had some headlines in the banking industry, in the financial services space. How has some of the recent events impacted your process or conversations you've been having with investors or as you're applying to become a de novo bank?
You know, early on when everything started to kind of unfold, which would have been last Friday, March 10, we weren't sure what the outcome would be. It was the beginning. We were just starting to hear stories about a bank potentially failing and not necessarily understanding what's taken place. Fast forward, So we didn't know, would it impact our application? Would the regulators slow down to see how everything turns out? And we did start to get a couple of questions from potential investors and people that we've been talking to. As we move into this week, it's become clear that it does seem to be relatively an isolated situation. And at the end of the day, how a community bank operates is vastly different than how many of the larger banks operate. You know, we have a very diverse portfolio. We support our kind of community. We're not niche specific when it comes to a specific industry. And then we also have shareholders that are our clients. And so, you know, having their arms around us as well, supporting the bank, gives us the confidence that we would be able to do well. And so just being able to have the conversations with, whether it's the potential investors, to explain the differentiators has been helpful, has been received well. And likewise, we've received timely updates from our regulators that indicate that our process is moving along and that what's happened has not impacted our particular application at this point.
Okay, so good conversations, but nothing to be too concerned about, at least for your process.
No, right.
So as it relates to your process, we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording. Can you tell the audience about the next step? Because I think all of us are very curious about what are some of the key milestones. So what's your next key milestone? And then just for the rest of the group to know, when could they start looking for more news about Fortuna?
So we're in the middle of the application process. We believe we moved into a phase where our regulators will do what they call field investigations, and they'll do interviews with our management, executive management team and our board. Provided all goes well there, we expect to be given conditional approval, which would allow us to raise our capital. We think maybe around early May, and I hope I'm not jinxing myself, but we think that we may begin our capital raise around early May, and that's when we'll be actively soliciting investors and potential investors to become a shareholder in Fortuna Bank and to support our mission, to support the bank, not only as an investor, but also as a client. And one of the unique things that we've done is we've made our entry point what we think is affordable at a $10,000 level. Typically, a bank, to be able to buy stock in a bank, a de novo, it's typically around $50,000. So we made it $10,000. So we think the entry point makes it relatively affordable and will allow us to have a greater and larger investor base, which in turn turns into that many more brand ambassadors for the bank. Once the capital raise is done, which we plan to raise somewhere, we believe we'll be raised between $20 and $25 million, will be given the okay to open our doors. So again, hoping that it's probably around a July, August date.
Very exciting.
I know.
Well, and I know our audience is probably more intrigued to talk more about your new bank experience and all that goes into that. But you're also a huge Salesforce advocate from back in the day when we first got started together. So I'd love to have you tell everybody, when was your first exposure to Salesforce? And what did you do to dive into the ecosystem?
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me what year it was, because I was trying to backtrack. But it was that first project. So was it 2017, maybe?
I think Elliot and I always just referred to it as the summer of Salesforce, where I was coming up to Columbus 3 or 4 days a week. Yeah,
exactly. So let's call it the summer of Salesforce. And as you kind of alluded to earlier, we were working on a business case, specifically with the retail teams, testing out a new model to really create maybe some more efficiencies within the retail branches, to do something a little bit different where we didn't have brand awareness, and to utilize Salesforce as our contact management tool. How did I dive into the ecosystem was really by using it. And in my time since that, and when I've had the opportunity to talk to other people about Salesforce or implementing Salesforce, if you don't use it, you can't learn it and you can't speak the language. And it becomes very difficult to kind of set the expectations that others use it. And so, you know, my biggest, I think, piece of advice and what I learned there was I felt like I was knee deep in Salesforce when we were building that program out, so that I could make sure I could answer questions, but then also that I understood exactly what was going on and the utilization of it and how we could use it to our advantage. It was no longer just a tool, but it was actually something that we could use, and I could speak to the advantages that it would create.
Yeah, and as I think back to that project, it was interesting because we were still pretty new on Salesforce. We were using it in commercial banking. We didn't have a lot of our data integrated. It was very much a sales pipeline tool, manual entry for the commercial bank. And I remember a project came up of, hey, we need to fix or test out a new business model for a newer market, because Columbus was relatively new for us at the time. And I remember it went to IT, and IT was thinking about they were going to build something in SharePoint or in .NET. And Elliot and I were like, well, we can do this in Salesforce. Like, give me 3 weeks. And I remember jumping in with you and talking through, well, let's walk through your processes. Let's understand how people work together and how you want to see them work together. And we were able to put something together pretty quickly, which it wasn't only, hey, here's Salesforce and here's your contacts and CRM, but we had emails integrated. We were tracking website activity. We were really trying to help the business work well together. And I don't think any of it would have worked if we didn't have someone like yourself as a business leader diving in and asking everybody questions. I think you were always like, well, what's your next step? What's your next task? Like, let me see the details. Like, let me help understand where you are and where you're getting stuck, and like actually use it as a coaching tool. And I think that's all something that's lost a lot in some of these implementations is if you don't have the business champion, you definitely are going to struggle.
100%. In conversations since that moment with, you know, other institutions that I've had the opportunity to be a part of, that was really the missing piece. Because if you don't use it, then it really becomes very difficult. If you don't use it as a leader, it really becomes difficult to get the rest of the team to understand the importance behind it and the benefit that it can provide.
So I'm going to lead you a little bit on this next question. So as a former business leader, I'm curious your opinion on a couple of themes that we typically see in some of these implementations. And I know you experienced it, but I think first off, how do you see how your team is working or not working, or maybe where their gaps are? So can you talk a little bit about how the platform in your experience at multiple institutions gave you visibility into maybe your team capacity, or maybe where you had coaching opportunities, or maybe where you had a client portfolio where you knew you weren't taking advantage of some easy opportunities, not necessarily to sell, but maybe to enable or educate the client.
Right. Well, and that's where coming back to you utilizing it, not only to understand how it works so that you can explain it and be a champion of the tool for the associates, but also when I was utilizing it, it allowed me to see who's using it, who's not using it. I could see what was happening in real time. And a lot of time we were, in a lot of cases, we were using it as a pipeline management tool. And I was able to budget accordingly based on what I was seeing in real time versus waiting on weekly updates or versus waiting on talking to a particular loan officer. So just even through that immediacy that you get, that immediate feedback that you get from the tool made managing the line of business and understanding how to forecast and understanding how to pivot when we needed to pivot, you had that insight that was missed and that was kind of missing before.
And we even did some things that I would say are not that hard to think about doing. It was more about consistency, making sure the activities were happening. And then, hey, as you're making an outbound call and you get a decision maker on the phone, are you asking for their email address? Are you collecting data? Are you sharing that data? And then I think after now you can see everything as a leader, but now you actually are enabling yourself and your team to actually engage with clients and prospects and really get yourself into the action, and you're communicating and hopefully adding value. So I know those are some of the key parts, but I guess one of the other parts I wanted to talk a little bit about was the reporting and visibility. And I'm thinking back to when we went through acquisitions and mergers. I know you're trying to bring two organizations together. We've got two separate data sets, potentially two separate platforms. But I know one thing we did, I believe at the time with you, was we gave you a dashboard of like, here's your clients who are at risk coming into the merger. Here's your net new accounts. Here's the ones running off. And you were able to see trends and themes and really coach your team. Can you talk about how you used it as a coaching tool?
Yeah. So to your point, it allowed you to see what was taking place. You could have really knowledgeable, the data that's provided, you can have knowledgeable conversations versus assumptions of what's actually happening. You can actually see the trends, and you can talk to the trends. You can take actions based on the trends that allow you to grow or to stop whatever you're trying to accomplish in that moment. It really gave us that insight to be able to be proactive as opposed to reactive when it comes to management and coaching.
And did you have a favorite dashboard or favorite report or favorite feature in the system?
Well, I think, my favorite feature was probably Next Task.
Yeah, where you're looking at pipeline and you can see it.
Right. What I don't remember is the actual probably name of the report. It's been a little bit. But my biggest, my biggest thing was I always wanted to know that my goal was always for the associates to stay in constant contact with our client base. And if we don't have a next task out there, we don't have a scheduled next time when we're going to connect with our clients. And so to me, that was always kind of the key was, when are we going to talk to our clients again? When are we going to get a hold of them and understand what their needs are? And that's really kind of when I talk about proactive versus reactive. It's really, you know, making sure that we're there for the clients and utilizing them in that manner.
So that's your background with Salesforce, I think, for the most part. But what I would also like to talk a little bit about is, as you're starting a new bank, you got a new challenge. There's a whole tech stack that's likely coming along with this new bank. So can you talk a little bit about how you're thinking about your initial technology investments? And I know we're always, at least in this business, typically talking to clients about fixing a lot of legacy tech. And what seems to be very exciting about your opportunity is you don't have anything to necessarily fix. You get to kind of make all the right decisions right out of the gate.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we talk about if we had tried to start this bank about 10 years ago, when technology was still limited in what was available, it would have been much harder. I think that was oftentimes the kind of the fear of starting a new bank, probably about 10 years ago when technology was becoming a thing, online banking was becoming a thing, mobile banking was becoming a thing. How would a startup bank be able to afford those tools and resources? Today, it's now table stakes, and providers have created ways to be able to do that. But if we have the luxury of not having an existing tech stack, and I've been spoiled with what I've been able to utilize as far as Salesforce, so it's really allowed us to have some good conversations about, well, how do we expect to communicate with in our team? How do we expect to communicate with clients? And then how are we going to keep the data? And so I think if you think about it that way, it allows you to have some of those conversations, trying to understand what's the goal, what do you want to be able to see, what do you want to be able to do, and what are the best tools to utilize to be able to get you there. And again, probably 10 years ago, you wouldn't have had those options. But today, there are so many options available to be able to build off of.
And as you think about your previous roles and how you've worked in potentially the Salesforce industry or with the Salesforce tools and in the retail banking space primarily, what would be some advice you would give to leaders around getting the most out of the tools they have? Because I think what I'm trying to get to here is like, it doesn't always come down to the tools, as I think we've proven and we've talked about. So what advice would you give people to make sure they're getting the most out of the platforms they have?
I think spending the time to understand how the platform works, and in doing so, that gives you the confidence that you believe in the platform, that you'll be an advocate for the platform, and therefore your team will then see that in your leadership and then utilize the platform and be able to get the benefits out of it. I think a lot of times, you know, as leaders, we see different tools that we can utilize and we think that it's going to be a quick fix and just implement the tool and go. You really have to think about what's the strategy involved. How am I going to be a champion of the tool? How are we going to utilize the tool? And what are the expectations associated with it? What outcomes do we want to see? I think without that time spent, that's where banks get frustrated, is because they implement tools and then nothing happens. But unless you actually have a champion who's kind of working through the implementation and execution, you know, results become limited.
And I think the change management, I mean, going back to where we were most successful, I think this is what was so easy to partner with you, is there'd be times where we'd pop into the market to have conversations, and you got everybody kind of talking amongst each other about what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. And it became almost like a rallying cry for the team and it was gamified in a bit too. Like, oh, well, I did this much or you did that much. Or like, how are we kind of competing with each other in a very healthy way? And I think the most exciting thing I remember with you and team was like the use of chatter to kind of encourage each other and talk through things. So that those change management activities definitely go a really long way in terms of success.
Yeah. And it's really incorporating the team. I mean, to your point, it's incorporating the team into the hype, getting everybody hyped up, motivating the team and kind of having fun with it. You know, work is hard. Like, let's make work a little bit of fun and find ways to make people smile.
Yeah, make it fun, make it easy, and do it a little bit to get some connectivity, not just with the clients, but within the team.
And show the successes, like highlight the successes, highlight the wins that come out of it to kind of continuously engage and motivate the team. And I think if people don't see what value it brings, it's very hard to get behind something. And so to be able to celebrate kind of the successes that take place, and again, it's just being a champion.
All right, I've got one more question for you. It is not technology or banking related whatsoever. We like to ask all of our guests a fun question at the end. So a fun fact about yourself that not many people may know. It could be an accomplishment, a talent, something, an unbelievable story. So what do you got for us today?
So my fun fact that I use most of the time is that I am related to George Washington. But if you ask me of the exact lineage, I don't know. My dad had said it and he had given it to me once, and he has now since passed away. And so now I have to do like the ancestry.com to find it. But somewhere we are related to the Balls, that my grandma, my great grandma, or my grandma's last name was Ball. And it's in that same George Washington family.
Very
That's
cool.
All I got.
I love it. Well, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk a little bit about our history and your experience on the platform and what you have going on. Thank you all for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. To learn more about Silverline, you can subscribe to the Silverline blog at silverlinecrm.com or follow on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook at SilverlineCRM, one word. Ilaria, if anybody wants to find you, best place to find you on LinkedIn, or where can they learn more about Fortuna and the new opportunity?
LinkedIn would be a great place to start. From there, I have several links. I have my email address so people can message me, and I'm happy to send additional information as it relates to Fortuna or any other questions they may have.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Take care.